You are Locked On Broncos, your daily Denver Broncos podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
You're listening to the Locked On Broncos podcast, hosted by Cody Rourke and Cameron Parker of Predominantly Orange, your daily Broncos podcast.
Super Bowl weekend is officially in the books, and that means that we are going to be without football for quite some time. So very bittersweet on that part here, but welcome back to another episode of the Locked On Broncos podcast over here at the Locked On Podcast Network, giving you your daily bite-sized Broncos podcast, giving you the best coverage and insight on all things orange and blue related. I'm your host, Cody Rourke, NFL analyst covering the National Football League and the Denver Broncos. I'm also a columnist over at the Fansided Networks, predominantlyorange.com. You can shoot me a follow on Twitter at Cody Rourke NFL, and I'd like to welcome in my co-host, Cameron Parker. Cameron, Super Bowl weekend officially over with. The madness, the long wait, the whole entire 2018 season is officially over. Now we're on to 2019. How you doing, buddy?
You know, speaking of wait, it's going to be a truck, a very long wait till we get to, you know, regular seasons again and preseason games. And, you know, it will be a very tiring process. But, you know, the best part about the NFL and with the news is, you know, there's really never an off season. And we will always have you covered over here at Locked On Broncos. So I am your co-host, Cameron Parker. You guys can follow me on Twitter at Cameron Parker PO, as well as Cody said, at Cody Rourke NFL for Cody.
Yeah. And so on today's episode of the show, segment one, we do have some good news for Broncos fans. Obviously, the biggest news of Super Bowl weekend because the Broncos weren't in there, but some major, major amazing happenings. And that involves with segment number one, we're going to talk about Pat Bowlen and Champ Bailey finally being inducted in the Hall of Fame. Also, a Bronco left out on that we are very, very passionate about that shouldn't have been left out on there. Segment number two, we're going to talk about the Super Bowl 53 recap. We're going to go through the game through a Broncos lens. And there's a lot of things I'm just looking at with the Rams side, and I'm just scratching my head. I will talk about that segment number two. And segment number three, I'll take a look at the 2019 season. What did the Broncos have to do to get back to competing in the very, very tough AFC? I mean, the Patriots back on top as Super Bowl champions. They're the team that everyone's going to be gunning for in 2019. What do the Broncos have to do to get back to the postseason? We're going to take a look at that based on what we learned from Super Bowl 53. So let's get right into it right away, Cameron. The best news of the weekend. And I think this is something that we were all in our group chat for Predominantly Orange. We were all sitting there and we were going back and forth waiting and just waiting to see whether or not Pat Bowlen, Champ Bailey, Steve Atwater, even John Lynch, if they were going to get in. I know there was some frustration from Broncos country in terms of when Steve Atwater's case of being presented in the Pro Football Hall of Fame was being presented by Jeff Legwold. You know, here's my thing with that. I mean, that was the talk of the weekend on Saturday before all the news had happened. But what we had found out was, just based on watching that presentation, it just didn't seem like he was being sold enough. And I don't know, maybe that's just me, but I feel as if you don't even have to look down at a computer screen to say what Steve Atwater means to the NFL. I mean, I would like to present for Steve Atwater. I mean, I'm sure there's a lot of people that would like to present for Steve Atwater. Very, very deserving, good friend of the show here. But unfortunately, he got snubbed once again. He's not going to be inducted in the Hall of Fame, and he rightfully deserves so, in my opinion. I think he deserved to be in over Ty Law, but, you know, I guess I could debate on that. We could sit and go back and forth in there, but Steve Atwater, he definitely should get in next year. He needs to get in. From what I've been told and from some of our buddies over there, BSN Denver, Ryan Konigsberg, you know, some of the sources that they said they were talking to said that there was a real strong chance that he was in the top 10, so really it boils down to 8, and so really it's all about making that final cut. But the NFL could expand in the year 2020 and adding more candidates to the Hall of Fame class, which I think you could see some rightfully deserving members like Randy Gratishar, Carl Mecklenburg. You know, those guys deserve to get in as well. Louis Wright. So I think taking it all into consideration, is things will get better going forward. But let's talk about the good news, Cam. Pat Bowlen finally got the knock on his door. His family was there to represent him. They got the knock on the door. Very, very beautiful piece. Very emotional piece over there. You can check it out at denverbroncos.com. But, you know, so deserving. I mean, this should have happened years ago before Jerry Jones. I'm happy to see Pat Bowlen in. And also, Champ Bailey. arguably the best cornerback of all time, getting into the Pro Football Hall of Fame. His stats speak for itself. Go back to the 2006 season he had. He had the best season ever as a cornerback. I mean, it's really, it's arguable. I mean, he had the best season of a cornerback of all time back in 2006. His numbers were unreal. He literally took away part of the playing field, and we talked about it last week. Clinton Portis, very, very salty in that regard, in terms of that. So Champ Bailey, very humble with that, acknowledged what Clinton Portis said, but at the end of the day, guess what? Champ Bailey, golden jacket in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, and I think the best part about being inducted into the Pro Football Hall of Fame as a first ballot Hall of Famer is it really confirms just how great you are at your position. You know, obviously when you get inducted into the Pro Football Hall of Fame at any point, first, second, third, however long you're on a ballot, it's a ceremonial feeling. But when you get inducted as a first ballot Hall of Famer, it's usually gratifying to know that you really were at the top of your class as far as a defensive back. And, you know, we think about defensive backs. Defensive backs are pretty much the hardest to get in for at least defensive backs. Now, granted, I think that the one thing that was gratifying to know with Champ Bailey is that he was at the point of his career, point of the defensive back career, where the shutdown term was at its forefront. And Champ Bailey was at the top of that conversation every single season. And, you know, we touched a little bit on it even before then, that how fitting is it that for Champ Bailey to be this all-around cornerback, whether it's been him in the tackling game, whether it is him in the coverage, which is his best attribute, but even helping out in the running game. And I think that the best part is him helping out in the running game made him a much better tackler. And it was definitely one of those traits that that often goes completely unnoticed, not just with shutdown corners, but just with Champ Bailey in general. And I think that for him to pass that along to Chris Harris Jr. has been extra beneficial. But for the Pat Bowlen family, you know, I think that and even in regards with Champ Bailey, too, one of the moments that I thought was extra special was, actually there were a few, but one of them was when, as I was watching the NFL Honors, and when the final announcement came for all these players, is that when it happened and it was all done, so to speak, Champ Bailey got this sense of excitement, and he reached for a high five to someone, I believe that was coming up the stairs, and he mouthed Pat Bowlen's name as he was giving a high five. I thought that gave me chills, you know, because obviously there was a story where, you know, he really wasn't sure of the trade early on, in about a year or so, or year and a half of it. So I thought it was pretty impressive, to be honest. And with Pat Bowlen, for them to put aside their differences, the ownership differences, I thought was very impressive for the Bowlen family to really put the interest where it should be, and that was on Pat Bowlen. Because as they said, this one's for Pat.
Yeah, absolutely, and that's the key of the thing. And one thing I really like about Champ Bailey, too, just going back to his playing days, is, you know, he was very, very humble. He never had to say anything. I mean, literally his presence on the field alone intimidated wide receivers into being scared. I mean, Dwayne Bowe knows very well. Marvin Harrison knows very well. Reggie Wayne knows very well who Champ Bailey is. Steve Smith, I think it just goes to show Steve Smith's ultimate respect for Champ Bailey. Steve Smith doesn't really give a lot of DBs any respect, and Champ Bailey, he said he was one of the toughest guys he's ever played against, and that is truly an honor for Champ Bailey. So, you know, there's some traction picking up. The Broncos could be playing in the Hall of Fame game coming up here in August. We'll find out more about that, but, you know, you almost have to figure it could be a lock. Now, in that situation, you won't see any starters playing that game. You know, it's just an extra game. It's just a kind of a showcase game there, and you're going to see a lot of young guys playing. But, you know, I think ultimately for the Broncos, this is a big day, big win. Now, obviously, there's some Broncos players that deserve to be in the Hall of Fame that are not yet in there. You know, we talk about Randy Gradishar, Carl Mecklenburg, Louis Wright. We talk about, you know, Steve Atwater, too, being one of the biggest ones. So hopefully in the year 2019 going forward, you know, you can factor in maybe you're going to get a guy like Peyton Manning, and maybe you're going to get a guy like Steve Atwater in, you know, to represent the Denver Broncos once again. So that's something we look forward to. Coming up here in segment number two, we're going to be taking a look at Super Bowl 53. And to be honest with you, I have a lot of takeaways on that. And so we're going to share that here coming up in segment two. But before we get to that, I want to remind you guys to check out Locked On Patriots. Mark Schofield over there, host of them, has you covered with the Super Bowl 53 recap with the Patriots coming out on top. You can catch all the action over there. Locked On Patriots. Mark Schofield, and you want to hear what's next for the LA Rams? Check out Brad Motter over there at Locked On Rams. Super Bowl 53 is in the books as the New England Patriots go on to win 13-3 over the Los Angeles Rams. And I tell you what, I tweeted it out, and this summarizes the game perfectly, in my opinion. Experience always beats youth. I think experience is greater than youth in a lot of cases, and a lot of people were talking about the young offensive, just the crazy, you know, mindset of Sean McVay. And this was a game where I think Bill Belichick really showed that he is one of the greatest coaches to ever step foot onto the playing field. And as much as I hate to say that, I, you know, as a Broncos guy, we all hate the Patriots. I mean, but you want, at the same time, you have to show respect to what they've been able to do. You know, everyone wants to say, okay, well, they're cheaters, this and that. You know, there are some asterisks on some of their wins. Absolutely, okay. But I'm not really here to talk about that. I'm here to talk about the fact that they've won another Super Bowl. Six Super Bowls for Tom Brady. Unbelievable. As much as we do not like the Patriots, you have to give respect to that. I mean, that is just an unbelievable accomplishment. And Tom Brady didn't necessarily play his greatest that we've ever seen him play. However, he managed the entire game on the offensive side of the ball, and the run game really came into fruition for them late in the game, picking up some big key first down. Sony Michel, Rex Burkhead to seal the game for the Patriots. But, you know, Tom Brady, you know, shook off a rough start. He shook off a start where he got pressured. He also threw a pick and just came in to find Julian Edelman, who is the Super Bowl MVP for Super Bowl 53. He came in for over 140 yards receiving on 11 receptions. And I tell you what, as much as I hated the fact that the Patriots won, going back and watching the game, you saw many people talking about, oh, it was a boring Super Bowl. The halftime show was awful. I mean, I don't even care about the halftime show, but that was defensive football. Defensive football is fun to watch. I guess I'm an old school guy. I know a lot of people want these high-scoring 54-51 games like we saw against the Rams and the Chiefs on Monday Night Football, but that's just not my thing. I love defensive football, and really hats off to New England, their coaching staff, and the defensive players for the Patriots. They brought it all night long against the prior top two offense with the Los Angeles Rams, Jared Goff, Todd Gurley, and it really just makes you question, really, Brian Flores going on to the Miami Dolphins, what is that going to mean for the Patriots heading into 2019? Does that make them a little bit more vulnerable? That obviously begs the question, but six Super Bowls for Tom Brady, another Super Bowl win, 13-3, unbelievable.
It is, and you know, it you touched on it really well. It pains, obviously, as we watch the Denver Broncos struggle the last handful of years, and just obviously with the success that the Broncos certainly have had against Tom Brady and the relationship that the Broncos country has with Tom Brady. It's just, it's one of those where, you know, it pains you to see the New England Patriots obviously win a game, or just win another Super Bowl, or appear in another Super Bowl. But the fact is, there is a reason why Bill Belichick is one of the best coaches, if not the best coach of all time. There's a reason why Tom Brady is considered one of the best quarterbacks of all time. For him to study a game as long as he has and maintained the health and just his dedication to studying playbooks every single time, you know, and the fact that he has now been able to grow with Josh McDaniels as his offensive coordinator, you know, and it pains us to say, you know, with what Josh McDaniels did here, but the relationship between the two of them is, it's irreplaceable, really. And they do a tremendous job game planning every single game. And with Belichick, game planning to take away your number one option, whether it's on defense, whether it's on offense, he does a tremendous job of that. And it cannot be overstated enough. And, you know, the Patriots really are the dogs of the AFC until Tom Brady retires. I mean, that's just the unfortunate thing. Yes, there's this new influx of young quarterback talent, or just young quarterback in general, or young play in general. But until these guys like Drew Brees and Tom Brady hang up their cleats, they will still be the dogs of that AFC, NFC, just because of the fact that they've been there before. And it shows you the veterans, and it shows you how much of the veteran leadership really did show in Super Bowl 53.
And really, for the Rams, it was tremendously disappointing. You know, we all had the Rams as the Super Bowl, as the team going to win the Super Bowl based on what we've seen. And, you know, I spent a lot of time watching film on them this week. And the thing that bothers me about the Rams is that just the jet motion, that reverse motion they always use with Brandon Cooks or Robert Woods, and really, they don't really give it to him, and they just run inside zone with, you know, Todd Gurley or C.J. Anderson. New England wasn't fooled by that. It was all window dressing. And for me, I look at this game game for Jared Goff. I look at this game for Sean McVay. You know, two guys that had a phenomenal year. I mean, Sean McVay, you know, very good offensive play caller. Jared Goff had a really good season this year, but on the biggest stage of them all, the moment almost appeared to be too big for them. You could tell that in just the way that the Rams offense had performed. Johnny Hecker, I believe it was 8 or 9 consecutive drives where, you know, the Rams had to punt the ball away. And the biggest question mark I have, the thing that really just makes me want to scratch my head, is the non-utilization of what Todd Gurley is really good at. The Rams completely abandoned what had worked for them all season long because C.J. Anderson came in the late stretch of the season, provided them with some spark, and I'm sorry, I don't see why on passing situations you have to have C.J. Anderson in. And yeah, you know, he had one catch where he made it, and you know, he made a move and went to go stiff arm a guy, fumbled the ball. Luckily, it went out of bounds. I just feel that in this moment, Todd Gurley, arguably one of the best running backs in the National Football League, it, you know, not utilized, not even a factor in this entire game. It was almost unheard of. And really, to flip it around on the defensive side of the ball before we get into segment three here is, you know, Ndamukong Suh, Aaron Donald, two guys that I think we were really looking at in this matchup, essentially, and we were thinking, okay, these guys can wreck this game, you know, with how strong and how speedy they are, especially on the defensive line position. You know, the first play of the game, Ndamukong Suh does phenomenal, blows up the fullback, you know, and unfortunately misses the tailback in that regard, and he gets, I think, a first down on that first run there on the Patriots' first drive. But ultimately, Donald, Suh, they didn't really do enough to make things possible. And one of the things that really absolutely just blew my mind, I didn't understand it, was matching up primarily Aqib Talib on Julian Edelman. I mean, Aqib Talib is a tall guy that's better off playing press coverage, or he's better off playing off coverage against a taller set wide receiver, but a speedy and smaller wide receiver like Julian Edelman, matching him up on him was a kind of a head scratcher for me. I figured you'd match up Aqib Talib on Gronkowski, which we saw several times, especially when they'd split Gronkowski out wide, they would match up Aqib Talib with him there. But, you know, ultimately, Tom Brady, Bill Belichick, they really came to grips. Josh McDaniels, they created a phenomenal game plan against this Rams defense. Tom Brady got the ball out of his hands fairly quickly. He had nothing but time. He did get hit several times, but ultimately, he had a clean pocket for, I'd say, a good portion of the night, and ultimately, that led to successful drives down the field. And they ran the same play 3 times in a row. That third time that they ran it, they caught Gronkowski wide open over the top with a linebacker in coverage down at the 2-yard line, and then Sony Michel would go to punch it in. And that was pretty much almost the exclamation point for this game, as the Rams couldn't get anything going offensively. You got to feel for Wade Phillips, got to feel for Aqib Talib. I really don't feel too much for C.J. Anderson, unfortunately. You guys could probably find out why based on his actions just as a human being, and we've all gotten in arguments with him on Twitter over time just for, you know, hey, man, focus on football. Stop arguing with every little troll. But ultimately, this was just a tremendous disappointment for the Rams, and I think it's going to be something that's a good learning lesson for Sean McVay. It's a good learning lesson for Jared Goff. What are they going to do with it going forward? That's the big question. They need to address a big wide receiver. I think they need to get a big play wide receiver that they can line up on the outside instead of all these short, speedy guys. They need a big play target for Jared Goff, and it was evident in Super Bowl 53. But coming up here in segment three, the AFC. You know, the Patriots are the team right now. And then behind them, you can arguably assume that the Kansas City Chiefs are the two teams right now that, you know, if you're in the AFC, you got to beat those two teams. You got to compete against those two teams. And so we're going to talk about that. What do the Broncos have to do to get back to competing in 2019? With the NFL season officially in the rearview mirror, we now have NFL free agency coming up here in the next month, which we'll have complete coverage over here at the Locked On Broncos podcast, as well as the NFL draft. We'll have complete coverage as well as also the Draft Network is launching their own big board where you can create your own big board. Head over to thedraftnetwork.com to check that out today. Good work by John Ledyard, Trevor Sikkema, and the guys over there at the Draft Network for putting that together. Go create your drafts. Share them with us here at Locked On Broncos. We'll get into that once April rolls around here. But what do the Broncos have to do to get back to competing in 2019? This is a big question mark. They got to do a lot of things. Now, I think one thing a lesson we can use from Super Bowl 53, we saw that experience can beat talented young people. You know, I'm talking about Bill Belichick against Sean McVay, Vic Fangio. Very, very experienced guy. Very, good defensive mastermind. Can Rich Scangarello offensively evolve this Broncos offense? Can Vic Fangio, Ed Donatell keep this Broncos defense very dominant? Now, the thing is, if you want to beat the Patriots, you got to be able to play press man-to-man coverage. You don't want to play the Chiefs. You want to compete against the Chiefs. You have to be able to press Tyreek Hill, play man-to-man coverage, and hope that you can get pass rush to Patrick Mahomes or even Tom Brady. We've seen predominantly that if you sit back in a zone coverage, you're going to get eaten up by those two quarterbacks. So the Broncos have to do a lot to address that, and I think a lot of it starts with coaching. I mean, I think that's the key essential. Look at the Super Bowl. Coaching was a big difference in this game between the Patriots or the Rams winning or losing. And ultimately, at the end of the day, experience overcame that with what Sean McVay had to deal with. This is going to be a great teaching tool for Sean McVay. He's going to have to go back to the drawing board. And, you know, they lost in divisional round last year, and now they lost in the Super Bowl this year. They're going to be a little bit more hungry. So with that, I think there's a blessing in disguise for the Rams. But for the Broncos, you have to factor in, okay, we got to get back into our winning ways. You got to come back in. You got to compete in the division. Right now, the enemy number one is in your division with the Kansas City Chiefs. You have to find a way to compete with them two times a year, get that tiebreaker essentially that'll help with playoff positioning. The Broncos got to find a way to get back to winning football, and I think it starts with understanding their identity, who they are, and that'll continue to evolve under a new coaching staff and a new regime. But Cam, what are your quick thoughts on that?
I mean, there's going to be a lot of new additions that certainly bring forth maybe a newer optimism, a greater optimism for 2019, because I expect that the Denver Broncos will be aggressive in free agency. We don't necessarily have an inkling of where they are headed, what positions of need, you know, that they are, you know, going to go target or go after. But I mean, that is in essence where what the Broncos should be doing. And I feel like, you know, the Broncos have to find that line where if they feel like, you know, the Kansas City Chiefs are this model of who they need to beat, and if they feel like they want to go back to the playoffs and create that winning and championship mentality again, which we all know that is the Bolin mentality. That is winning and championships all rolled into one. And in order to get there right now, you have to get past the Kansas City Chiefs. So I think you take it one step at a time and you start formulating a blueprint of how to beat the Kansas City Chiefs. And if you can do that, you start utilizing the fact that, okay, our defense still might be pretty good, but we can still address a lot of the defensive needs on the defensive side of the ball. Then factor in the offensive side of the ball. How do we start maybe creating this model of a type of Kansas City Chiefs type system, or, you know, players that could fit a Scangarello system, you know? So you start looking at it like that, because that was one of the things that we certainly saw with Super Bowl 48. They obviously went and, you know, spent money like gangbusters in that free agency to bring in guys like Aqib Talib and DeMarcus Ware and TJ Ward and Emmanuel Sanders. Obviously, Emmanuel Sanders is still here, but, you know, we certainly might see not exactly that type of aggressiveness, but maybe to the point where the Broncos might look at the Kansas City Chiefs as a certain model to not just beat, but also emulate.
Yeah, and the Broncos have to do, you know, they have to evolve. The NFL is evolving, it's adapting, everyone says it's changing, but you have to change with the times, and the Broncos haven't done that in a couple of years. So looking for them front office-wise, the front office has got to do a better job there. I think they were in a great start last year with the NFL draft. John Elway did a phenomenal job, but John Elway in the front office has to continue to evolve and be better than what they've been in the last couple of years. I think they're heading in a step in the right direction here with obviously the hiring of the new coaching staff. That is a very good move on paper. That is popular right now, but has to translate to on-field wins, and that's going to be a big thing. Big free agency coming up. The Broncos have around $45 million in cap space to work with. That'll be huge. Obviously, re-signing Matt Paradis is very big priority for the Broncos here. But coming up this week here on the Lockdown Broncos podcast, we're going to be getting into our series of the week where what did 2018 teach us? We're going to get into that starting with tomorrow's episode of Lockdown Broncos. We'll be bringing it back to you once again. Also, we're over 100 reviews on iTunes. Please leave a review on the show. Write your name, write your Twitter handle, or tell us why you love listening to the show. And then obviously you'll be entered into our February Lockdown Broncos contest giveaway. Details on that too be announced very, very soon. So stay tuned for that. I want to thank all the fans for the amazing support. Once again, we hit over 27,000 downloads in the month of January, and we're already close to 5,000 just 3 days into February. That's an awesome, awesome start, and it couldn't be possible without the listeners in Broncos country. So once again, thank you guys so much for tuning in to another episode of the show. We'll see you tomorrow. So this is Cody Rourke, speaking for Cameron Parker. Go Broncos.